is interested in you, how you get to Krishna consciousness.
He is like, I don't do it this
fast. The meanings of Prabhupada, some memories.
Yeah, not so much.
Then maybe something about how to, some tips on maintaining Brahmacharya throughout life. What are the crucial points to consider? To what extent one's horoscope or all these things affect this acquired karma, which is this tendency we are seeing as karma. At a certain age, many people getting married after spending so many years in the lifestyle. There were always some questions about this.
What we have to get married? Is that what you mean?
Like, say, Brahmacharya after 15 years in ashram or sannyasis, they are great for us. So, what could be the possible reason?
Okay, so the discussion's basically along the lines of Naishthika Brahmacharya. So then, as I mentioned before, there's two, right? Upakurvana and Naishthika. Upakurvana, there's the idea that they'll get married in the future, but they need training. You know, it means an intelligent person understands. They need training as a brahmachari to be a good grihastha. Because a grihastha has to be a grihastha brahmachari, controlled senses. Unless the senses are controlled, then the grihastha cannot lead the family. So then, therefore, one has to be a good brahmachari to be a good grihastha. So then, in the essential point is that the principles of the brahmachari ashram, you know, must be able to be followed and understood. Now, as we were discussing before, this principle of rasa. So rasa, everybody has relationships and is desiring of that. And then, so one has to be able to get some taste out of something. Right? Taste is what everyone's looking for. So the basic difference is that the Naishthika is able to get that taste within the realm of his duties, the realm of his activities, and the personalities that are involved in his activities. You know, his devotional service, his sadhana, and the sphere of persons that he deals with. Then he is able to be satisfied. Then one is able to maintain. Right? You can maintain something if you're getting a taste of it. Just like if you're, you know, eating something you like, then you can keep eating it. Right? If you're eating something you don't like, you won't stay eating it for long. So same with activities. You only do them as long as you're getting something out of it, some taste out of it. And when there's no taste, then one will look elsewhere for taste. And one will naturally look to places where he has heard that others have gotten taste, right? So, you know, one such ashram is called the Grihastha Ashram. Grihastha Ashram is an ashram that is much talked about, that so much taste is there, right? But that's basically where it ends. It's only talked about. Right? Means everybody talks about how nice it is, but everybody's still talking about how nice it is, hoping that one day that they will taste what they're talking about. Like that. This is, Prahlad Maharaj makes this point, Shruti Shukat. Shruti, we've heard about it. What is this Shuka, this happiness? Yes, we've heard it is very good, and everybody's doing it because they heard it's very good. Right? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I tell this story about the zoo. No, the circus?
Yeah.
Huh? I told that yet.
No.
You've heard? No. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur tells a story about the circus. So one day out in, you know, in some place out in some village somewhere, you know, outside, then this circus came to town. And they started setting up this circus. And they were setting up a very big circus, you know, bigger than normal. And normally circuses, they roll into town and they set up in one day and then they move on, you know, after they do the show and then go. But this circus was taking months and months and months to set up, and the tents were getting bigger and bigger and so much more elaborate and everything. And so everybody in the whole area was wondering, what is this? Everybody was wondering, what is this circus taking months to set up like that? Then finally, so everybody was interested, what is this place? But then at the end, then it was announced that, okay, on this day, the circus is going to open. So everybody from the whole area, all the surrounding villages, towns, everybody came. And then when they came, it was supposed to open at a certain time, and then somebody came out and said, okay, this is a very special circus, very special show. So special that everyone has to stand in single file line and go in one at a time to get the full experience of the show. So everyone thought, okay, you know, and okay, it took months to set up, and now they're saying this definitely must be something new. So they all got in a nice line and everything. And then they opened the doors, and the first man was let in, and he went inside. And when he got inside, the whole place was empty. There was nothing inside. Absolutely nothing like that. And then in the very middle, he saw this big, huge, huge man. He thought, what's this? So he went over near. And when he got near, then the big man, when he came close, he said, oh, you have come to see the circus. So he grabbed him and he took a stick and started beating him like anything. Just beating, 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 beating. And the man was yelling and screaming and all that. And then finally he let him go. He said, now get out of here. You know? So then the man went, you know, running to the tent. Then when he gets to the entrance, all the other people are there. So then he composes himself, comes out very nicely. Then everyone says, oh, how was the show? So now he has two choices, right? He can either say, no, it's terrible, you go inside, somebody will beat you, then he'll be the only one that got beaten, right? And then he'll look like a fool, and everyone will joke, ah, you got beat up like that. So then he says, oh, wonderful show, wonderful show, and then ran off, right? So then everybody's excited. So then the next man goes in. Same thing, he gets caught, he gets beaten, and then when he comes out, they say, how was the show? Now if he says, no, the guy in there beat me, let's say, but the other guy said it was great. So then he'll look a fool, right? So therefore he says, oh yes, very nice show. And this way, everyone in the line went in, everyone got beaten, and everyone said, very nice, very nice. So then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur then gives the point, is that every father is getting beaten by the material nature, you know, in the household ashram, you know, the troubles with the wife, the children, the finance, everything. There's nothing enjoyable about the whole thing, just being beaten from beginning to end. And then, after all that, then he tells the son, oh yes, very nice, you also get married, you also enjoy it. Like that. So that is the Grihastha ashram. It is heard about. Everybody hears that it's happiness. But where is that happiness? Where is it? You think about it. Right? It means we're just going straight in. We're not going right or left on this. We're staying on this line. So if anybody is not interested in this line, then we will not like this class. Okay. So what is that nothing is there. Where is the time? You're here in the temple. You get up in the morning, right? You know, you're not going to be able to sit there and look at the nice face of your wife and the kid. You can come to the temple, go to Mangal Arati, stay for this or that. Then after that, off to the office, right? Then after the office, then you go home, take your bath, you want to take a little rest, a little time to yourself. Then you might get a little bit of time with the family, right? 1 hour, 2 hours. Then you have to take rest, otherwise you can't get up in the morning. Right? And this is what goes on day in, day out, every day of your life. Right? It's not something different. Now and again, a little vacation. Right? But what does vacation mean? Right? Okay. Here, right? You're in the house. Right? In the house. You get up in the morning, you leave the house. You come back at night and, you know, house is still there. Kids are still there. Wife is still there. House is somehow or another mystically clean. I think the ladies do it. And, you know, something's there to eat. That also seems to be arranged like that. And that. What does a vacation mean? Vacation means it's a vacation for the wife. The husband now has to run around, look for everything, arrange all the meals, pay for everything, hassle with this, hassle with that, all these things, where's the vacation? So he's very happy to get back. Right? So there is no vacation. Right? No vacation. You know? It's we hear about these things. Right? But you can't. If it is said, then why are they calling? They're calling the business. So how is it going? This, that, you know, so many things, you know. You know, the oldest son doesn't go, he stays back at the house. They've only gone with the wife and the younger children, you know, and they have to keep calling what's going on, you know. But they're not tearing the place down or burning the place down or something. So anxiety is there. So it's something we hear about. So that's the whole point of what the Grihastha Ashram is for. Is we've heard about it since time immemorial, that it's something very wonderful. We've always heard about it. So now the question comes is first of all, as a brahmacharya, we hear that nothing's really there. Right? Means, you know, there's something, okay, small child, and when they say their first words, or walk the first time, or, you know, come sit on your lap, okay, so they do that how many times in 20 years? How many times are they first time talking or first time walking, or, you know, or crawl up onto your lap, right? You know, your 16-year-old is crawling up onto your lap. You know, so sweet, so wonderful. He's learned his first, you know, punk slang. Oh, such nice, you know. Oh, he smoked his first cigarette. Oh. My boy is growing up, yes. You understand? So that means these things we hear about, the Bhagavatam's talking about, that even those are the areas of where there is some little bit of seeming happiness, but we see they're also very momentary. Very momentary. Very momentary. So, therefore, with knowledge you go into it, you have a doubt that you're going to enjoy. But, due to habit, one thinks something is there, right? Everybody's doing it. And every lifetime before, we've done it. So it's something must be there, right? You can't have, you know, 6 billion people on the planet that are stupid, right? Right? With that. So they're all doing it, and they're saying it's nice, so therefore it must be something is there. Right? Like that. It's being presented like that, right? You have your movie, and you have the nice actress, everybody goes because that actress is in it. It doesn't matter if the storyline's good or not, but she's in there. Like that, or your actor is there. But outside of that, you ask people, what is it like working with this person? You know? And they'll all say, it's very not so wonderful. Right? Not so wonderful. Like that. It's not nice dealing with actors and actresses. Like that. Very difficult. But there's a show. Somebody writes a script, right? And where's that script coming from? Their own mind. Their own ideas that this will be wonderful, will be happy. This is the way it should be. The girl will do this, the boy will do that. And for that time, that 2 hours, then it looks very nice. And then the 2 hours is over. Right? Point is those people aren't like that. The guy who wrote the script is not like that. The people in the audience aren't like that. The person making the money are not like that. Who's like that? Where is it? Right? Where are those qualities? Where is that wonderful? Where is that happiness? Right? Otherwise, then there would be books and movies just on the happiness. You know? They're always getting it, they get together, this, that. But what is it? Okay, let us take just the tradition. I'm talking from the tradition now. The orthodox Hindi masala movie tradition. Right? Is after, I mean, I may get something wrong here. I'm not, that's, it's been a long time, right? Seeing one of these. But the is somewhere between, somewhere means there's the, he sings his song, right? She sings her song. And there's some time where they both sing a song together, right? And then while they sing that song, there's all these flashes, right? 2 second flashes of their life, right? the kids, driving in the car, going to Kashmir, you know, all these different things are all happening, right? And it's all happening in the length of one song, right? You know, like that, isn't it? And the whole rest of the movie is something else. So actually you see the happiness of Grihastha's life even is not interesting to the materialists. Right? Otherwise, that's the nice thing. They're there, they're singing the song. It's, everything's going very nicely. They're doing things together, working out everything. Everything's perfect and wonderful. But there's no story. Right? Isn't it? Right? You have your soap operas. Right? Soap operas is based on everything working very nicely, nice family relationships. No, it's based on there's something wrong. Something went bad. Somebody said this, somebody did that. Right? Newspaper, full of all kinds of wonderful news, how people are cooperating, getting on together and everything. Yes? No. So, therefore, if we've heard about it, right? It's talked about that it's there, but where is it? You add it up. Where is it? Right? You add it up, 24 hours in a day. Okay, then you come in. First you come in, just see the wife, oh, are you old, this, that, and the kid comes running and that, and you know, the dog barks and whatever. And okay, you're okay, yes, this is home, everybody appreciates me, I'm the Lord here, this and that. And then after that, you know, this happened today, that happened today, you know, tell the kid to quiet up, you know, what's wrong with the dog, this, that. So, what was that? How long was that moment? Right? A moment's defined as 1/11th of a second. Right? So it's necessary in the Vedic literatures to describe something that's 1/11th of a second. Right? Because there are experiences that happen less than a second. So these happinesses fall in those categories. Right? The moments, they say the moments of happiness, moment. Moment is 1/11th of a second. Right? Maybe something a little bit later, you know, eating, white sirsan, you know, something there. Just there's a little interaction. Another moment. You know, leaving in the morning, going to work, or going to the temple. Another moment. So you add those few moments up. Maybe you get a second in a day, you know, if you're really lucky. 11 moments all in one day. That's a big day. Right? So you take 1 second, multiply times 60, times 60, times 24, right? Become a pretty big number. Put that on one side of the scale, and on the other side you put 1 second, you put one. And then you figure out if it's worth it. Right? That's one aspect. So, you know, here we're having some fun, we're talking about the negative side. But it's just, whether one is getting married or not, one has to understand these points. Because one is a fool if one actually thinks there's something there. So what is a Grihastha Ashram for? In knowledge you know these things. In knowledge you get married. And in knowledge then you see, yes, it's true, there is nothing here. Right? That's the purpose of the Grihastha Ashram, is to understand that there is nothing there. There is no substance. Right? There is nothing from this material world can give us any substance in the Grihastha Ashram. There is no substance. Nothing's there. Right? But the Naistika means you can understand this by hearing. You hear it, you're convinced. Upapurvana means you hear it, then you want to see. You know, just like we tell you, oh, yeah, we saw this movie, terrible movie. And most people go, okay, I'm not seeing that. But some people go, terrible? How terrible? You know, what scene was terrible? It's like, I'm going to go see it, you know? It's like, yeah, I'm not talking about it. Okay, yeah, okay. Then they go and they come back, yeah, it was really terrible. You know? But they had to see it to be convinced. So that's the difference between the Naistika and the Upapurvana Brahmacharya. That's, you know, very simply presented. So that is the thing. So the Naistika means that he has to be able to be satisfied. He knows this idea that women will make him happy does not exist. Women cannot make men happy. Neither can men make women happy, right? That's 11th canto, that brings that point out. Pingala makes the point very clear. In history, there's never been a man who satisfied a woman. Never. Like that. No. It means when you have unlimited desires, how many of those can a man fulfill? Right? So therefore, something's better than nothing, right? Women are very practical people. So, you know, they'll take something rather than nothing, right? Men are a little bit more radical. You know, it's all or nothing. But women is something's better than nothing, you know? And if they can get something that's better than another something, then it's there. You know, be with one man, and if another man is better, if they can get that without losing anything, they'll take that. Right? This is called chastity. Right? Chastity is it's arranged so nicely that they can't make any other arrangement. So therefore, then this arrangement's good. Any other arrangement's too risky. It's too dangerous. Like that. Too dangerous. This guy is better, richer, better looking, but socially it may be a disaster. Or, you know, maybe, you know, we've also, if you check this, he's also got some other lady. So it might not be so solid, so unless you can get some too many ifs. Therefore, chastity. Right? This is the definition of chastity. So the whole point is man has never been able to satisfy. So conversely, woman has never satisfied any man. If it is, why are they, why is sannyas? Why down across? Because there is no satisfaction. There can't be satisfied. It's not possible like that. A man is thinking what? Thinking what? A woman is nice, gentle, well-behaved, soft-spoken, they're very beautiful. You know, they do everything very fine, and they do so much service. Right? But they're just doing that just out of love for, you know, mankind. Right? Is it? Yeah, I mean, you think about it. Why do they take, you know, oh, they'll take care of the house. Okay, that's nice. But if you really think about it, where did the house come from? Did they provide the house? Did they provide the food? Did they provide everything? This man sits there and just looks at the beautiful face of his wife while she renders service all day. No, he has to work and get all the things that she organizes, right? Right? Man doesn't need the house, woman wants the house. Right? So if she takes care of it, it's only normal. Right? Nowadays, why do I should take care of the house? She wants the house, man doesn't need the house, he'll sleep anywhere. Right? Like that. They want the house. You know, and now they want the man to take care of it also. Right? It's like, so the point is they're taking, because it's their thing, they're into the house. They dress nicer. They like it because they like to look beautiful. Right? Not then necessarily just wanting to please the husband. That's chastity. Okay, I'll only put on all the things I want to put on when the husband's around. When he's not around, I won't wear it. Right? Otherwise, if you leave them up to their own devices, then are the modern women, are they, they're not necessarily married, are they dressing nicely? Yes. They like to dress nicely. It's just their nature. They like fine things. And they like to dress. They like to dress, behave. So they're doing that for themselves. They're not just doing it for the man. Right? So therefore, it's not the man has this idea, oh, it's the wife, all these things for me, just that. Like that. So who's the fool? We say women are very materialistic, this, that. But they're not foolish. Right? Means they want a house, they get a house. Right? You know, they want stars, they're getting them. They want bangles, they want children, they're getting them. They're getting all of it. And whatever the man can provide, they're getting it out of the man. Right? And what is the man thinking? Oh, this wonderful, nice little woman who is doing all these nice things for me. But if you look at it, is that what they're doing? Right? If they don't behave nicely, any smart woman knows you don't behave nicely, you don't get the goods. Right? So therefore, all you have to do, the guys, men are so foolish. Just a smile now and again, and a little bit of nice talking, a little bit of service, and the guy works his butt off for you. Right? Very simple. Like that. So, who's the fool? Right? You may say, no, women work hard in the house, but they're working with things they want to have. How much cloth does the man have? Right? How much cloth does the woman have? Right? So if they're washing so many clothes, okay, man's clothes are there, but who else's clothes are there? Whose is more? Right? Oh, they gotta take care of the kids. Who wants the kids? You understand? You know, oh, they gotta take care of the house. Who wants the house? So the point is it's their own. You know, they want it. They gotta work for it. It's like the man wants woman, he's gotta work for it. So therefore he goes out of the business, rides on the train for an hour and a half to work, you know, sits there with all kinds of crazy people, rides all the way back. You know? He has to work for it. He wants to keep women, he has to work. So same time as women wants to keep all those things they get from men, they gotta work. How much work they have to put into the man is very little. Right? Man's got to spend 8, 10, 12 hours a day on the women. Right? The women just have to smile at the right time. That's it. So, you understand? So, that's what it is. So, that's it. So, right? So, the point is are they actually the perfect source of happiness for men? Right? You understand? That's the whole point. That's the thing. Just the illusion is they look a little nicer, and they look better than the brahmacharis with whiskers, you know? Like that. You know, voice is a little sweeter. Like that. You know? Like that. So, that's all. But otherwise, there's nothing there. Could you imagine if they looked the same as men? Would anyone deal with them? Forget that. No one would have anything to do with them. So therefore, Krishna, out of this kindness, has made them the way they are so that people, you know, have the idea that they'll be very, very nice. Right? Just that their beauty, even women are bewildered by women. Right? Means Putana came in a very beautiful celestial form. Even the other women of Yashoda Maya and all, they're all bewildered. Oh, such a beautiful woman. She must be nice. Right? She wasn't nice. Right? So that's the whole point. They know this and they use it to advantage. Use it to advantage. Like that. Whatever it is, that's their nature. It's just the way they are. You can't expect anything different. So therefore, you know, they're dealt with. Because, you know, this is their mentality. They need so much, want so much. So out of kindness, then those who are willing arrange it for them. Like that. So it's natural. One doesn't deal badly with them. You know? Like that. So like a small baby, you have to do everything for them. So they're taken care of. You know, you do it for them. That's what they need. So those who are willing. So women are willing to take care of little babies, and then men are willing to take care of the women. So Naistika Brahmacharya means he understands this whole thing, and that it's actually an illusion. There is nothing to gain. Nothing to gain. There's nothing to gain. So therefore, then they don't get involved. And then they are very happy in the association of the other devotees and brahmacharis and like that. So that is the situation. Now, if we want to maintain this, now that is in the next step. See, we've just dealt with, we've discussed, you know, to some degree, the downside of the other. You know, why one shouldn't get involved. Okay. But the brahmacharya ashrama own should be able to stand. It shouldn't be that one's brahmacharya just because grihastha life's bad. Right? Because otherwise, if that's the only motive, any time you see a good grihastha couple, one will have a doubt. You know? Like that. One may have a doubt. Of course, if you talk with that couple, then you'll find out this and that. But whatever. It's another thing, at least from the outside it looks okay. So now the point is that the brahmachari, generally what's thought of as the means of maintaining brahmachari ashram is the opposite of what is actually what maintains it. Right? You know, just like one thinks one will be happy, so the opposite of what will actually make you happy is what you do, right? Means the living entity wants to be happy, so they do the opposite. They get married. Right? Like that. So this is kind of, this is the thing. So the brahmacharis also have a tendency in the brahmachari ashram to do those things that actually are not good for brahmacharis. Right? And then this way they think that they're advancing as brahmacharis. And other brahmacharis also think, yes, oh, he's advancing. Very advanced brahmachari. But actually, those aren't the things. See, is so now we've discussed gross and also the mind. You know, the grosser aspects of the mind. So now, caught up in all these things, we have a thing, what's called distinction, adoration, profit. Right? Dhanam, janam, sundari. These three. Right? That we're unique. We're special. People should recognize that. We should get facilities for that. Right? That prestige that comes with it. You know, the facility. All these things. So, these are the underlying principles, you know, in the Grihastha Ashram. Right? It means everybody tells you you're wonderful. Yes, that's good in the beginning. But eventually, you know, women have to tell you you're good. Right? So, therefore, then Grihastha Ashram, the idea is a woman will tell him he's good. So when a woman stops telling him he's good, it's not exactly what was planned, right? You know, you were expecting that this prestige would go on, but unfortunately it's an illusion, you know? You have to perform. Then, you know, something is praised, you know? And generally one will find that praise comes, you know, directly in relationship to things given, you know, time spent, like that. You give something and then they're all smiles for a day or two, right? And then after that, it's back to normal. Right? So even that, one sees that the prestige, no, it's not, it isn't there. One is thinking it's there, and it's not there. So then one thinks, this woman doesn't appreciate me, another woman will. Right? So an underlying principle is prestige. Right? So then we have to see in the Brahmacharya Ashram, are we working for prestige? You know? Okay, we're in the white club. Now we've joined the saffron club. Right? So that's more prestigious. Or we've gone from, you know, Bhakta Jose to, you know, having a spiritual name to having second initiation. You know, is there prestige involved? Is that our motive? You know, or we're just one of the wallahs in the temple, and then we get some position. You know, so is that something? Is that important for us? Is that position important? Being recognized for some reason or another, or some of our own personal quality—the way we do things, the way we talk, walk, dress—we dress differently than everybody else. You know, or we give class in a special way, or our kirtan is unique, or our, I mean, whatever it is, whatever it may be, you know, and unlimitedly the mind can think of something. Yes, so the way I roll out my bed and roll it up is more efficient than anybody else. You know, like that. You know, anything like that. It's like, you know, so something is there. You know? So is that behind it? Is that in the consciousness? If that is, we can see that's an obstacle for brahmachari life. Therefore, being humble, being meek and humble, offering respect to others, being tolerant, this third verse of Shikshastaka, if you want to be a brahmachari, or you want to perfect spiritual life, this is important. If you want to perfect spiritual life, it means you have to be detached from material energy. Being detached, then, that is the brahmachari, the sannyasi. So it's the same principles apply, no different. Right? If one is in this mood, then what's the result? Right? If you perfected the third verse, then what is the next step? Yeah, na dhanam, na janam, na sundari, right? Baba had bhakti rahituki, right? Ahituki bhakti, right? And another result is kirtaniya sada hari. Right? So these are results. And then from that, then we want to be established, Krishna's lotus feet. Then bhava manifests, then mahabhava manifests. So this comes from this is a very, very key verse. Like that. So distinction, you know, like that, where you make adoration from that prophet, facility. Yes, you know, I have to have this or that, or I have my locker, or I always have this locker, I always sleep in this spot, or... So the more we're attached to all these things, then we have to be very careful. You know? We have to be very, very careful. Like that. That these things are give rise, you know? Okay, then if it's all you're attached to a spot, or a different thing, or a different particular plate, or a particular spot in the Prasadam hall, or, you know, a particular place during the kirtan, then after a while, then it's always going to be a problem. Someone's always in your spot. So then what's the solution for someone always being in your spot? It's, of course, within the ashram, you can make politics, this, that, or whatever. But other than that, then it's to get your own spot. Now, unfortunately, that spot has to be taken care of, right? So then you need, you know, and women are good at taking care of that spot. So then, you understand? So these things one has to be very careful of. So someone can be humble, someone can be have a good service attitude, right? Because that's another thing. Grihastha's thinking, wife will serve. Right? Women are always complaining, why they always expect us to do so much stuff, right? It's like we're devotees, they're devotees, why are they expecting? Many times you see, grihastha's get married, they're devotees, but they somehow or another expect more than the devotional field. You know, like that. You know, the natural submission and this and that. But they want more than that, because that's what the way it was in their house and their mother and their father and, you know, everybody else. So that mundane conditioning is there. So that thing is there, service, being served. So if one is thinking I should be served like that, then it's very difficult for brahmacharya life. One has to be in the mood of service. One has to want to render service. It shouldn't be that I'm a senior devotee, I don't do this, I don't do that, I don't clean, I don't cut sabji, I don't serve prasad, I don't, you know, whatever it is. No, it should be, you know, everybody does everything. Like that. Maybe now and again, for some particular purpose, then one has some abilities that, you know, need some particular application, so one can do something at that time. But it should never be that one doesn't want to do. Right? Means one should always be wanting to do or willing to do, though maybe due to one's, you know, service, one can't do it. Right? But it shouldn't be is that one enjoys not being able to do because of the service. Oh, you know, I have so many meetings, I can't do all these things. You know, and one is, no, one would like to do. But because one has a managerial ability, that must be engaged in Krishna's service, therefore one must be in a meeting or doing something. So therefore, maybe one can't do that. Someone else who's newer, he's doing it because he doesn't have that ability. It has to be done anyway. It means a manager could do it. Okay, yes. But then he's doing it himself. Now if he manages it, he can get 100 people to do it. So much more gets done. So therefore, it's for Krishna's service, not for themselves. Right? And to serve Krishna, we engage our nature. Therefore, but the mood is that one is very happy to do. And one is very happy to do these services. Like that. They give very much happiness. So one is there, that menial, that simpleness, like that. One should be simple to do. But the conditioned nature may have qualities that have to be engaged. So that's also humility. You engage those in Krishna's service. Right? But according to Krishna's direction, right? In cooperation with others. So that humility is there. And that service attitude. These go together. Then we see cooperation. If we can't cooperate with other people and live with other people, one also will find it difficult to be in brahmacharya. Right? One's idea is I will live in a house separately, but one forgets that one has to live in the house too with people. Right? Wife is a person, kids are persons. Like that. So still the problem is there. It's just intensified. Right? The brahmacharya doesn't necessarily want anything out of you. Just, you know, you can't, you know, it's just a problem. you know, he always puts his stuff on top of your locker and this and that, whatever. But now in a marriage, the wife wants something from you. Kids want things from you. Right? The guy doesn't want things from you so much directly. Whatever, they just, you know, they're just not careful, you know. Leave a mess in the bathroom, you know, leave their stuff around, you know, move your dhoti over and hang theirs there, you know, or come and take your dhoti down thinking it's theirs, or, you know, whatever. So many things that are the great, great calamities of the brahmachari. Right? You know, you've all heard the story of the sadhu and the mouse, right? With the copans, right? Yeah, so it's a big calamity, right? Mouse keeps chewing on his copans, taking the copans off the line. Big calamity. So he goes through this whole thing until he ends up in very entangled grihastha life. And then after looking at the situation, then he decides. He grabs his copan and tells the mouse, okay, let's go. Right? You know? So the mouse and his copans is nothing, right? You know, it's like that. See, Brahmachari is having trouble getting space to hang his own dhoti. Okay. As a grihastha, still you have to hang your own dhoti. But now you have to find the space for hanging 10 saris. Right? Isn't it? So it's not that it's an illusion that it's there. That's why it's called maya, something that's not. We think that it's something there, right? So much emotional support, right? If you go and talk to, you know, another man, another brahmachari, you know, you call him, you say, I got this problem. Okay. Like that. How long does it take? It takes a few minutes to explain your problem. And they listen, and then they spend a few minutes giving you their opinion, you know, what they know best to help you. And it's good or not good, and that's it, finished, over. Okay. There's no, you know, it's how you say it, there's no, there's no obligation, right? You know, whatever it is. You just, you know, somebody you trust, you speak to, and they, you know, try to do their best. That's all. Like that. Okay, so then the idea is, okay, woman will give emotional support. Okay. You know, okay, yes. How much time does it take? Now, who's doing the most talking? Right? The man comes and explains his problem to the woman. Okay, it takes 2 or 3 minutes. Okay. How long does it take for a woman to explain her problems to the man? Right? And do women want solutions to their problems? No, they just want you to sit and listen. And even though they're going on and on and on, and they've said the same thing already 5 times from 5 different angles, you're supposed to pay full attention. Don't pay attention. They're not happy. Right? You understood what they were saying in the first 30 seconds, but you got to listen to it for 1 hour, right? So, who's getting the emotional support? Right? The man or the woman? Right? So when they say brahmacharis don't provide very much, but women also don't provide very much. Not only that, you're not obliged to be brahmachari, you know, but the wife, you have to. And the brahmachari, how often he has problems, you know, after some weeks, months, or even years, like that. Woman, you're doing okay if it's just once in a day. Right? Doing okay. Like that. You know, it's like, in other words, as the mind shifts, as they think of a new angle on the same problem, you have to hear about it. They've already explained the whole problem to you. Right? You understand it. You know what the solution is. But that's not what they want. They just want you to listen. And now, they are happy. They walk out of the room. Then they think of another angle on it. You know? This one might say that. I didn't think about that one. Now you have to hear about that. Right? So, the emotional support is not there. So therefore, you have to be able to cooperate and live with, you know, the fellow brahmacharis, no matter, you know, how rough and ready they are. But still, it's more peaceful and less entangling than any alternative, right? There is no perfection. Just like a grihastha thinks there'll be this perfection. The Brahmacharya also thinks there may be material perfection, right? The difference is the Grihastha is interested in attachment, while the Brahmacharya is interested in detachment, right? Both of them are a material fault, right? Too much attachment or too much detachment, one can't perform devotional service, right? Because otherwise you're too attached, so you can't engage in Krishna service, you want it for yourself. Or you're too detached, then you don't want to use it in Krishna service, you can't engage in Krishna service, right? So that's the thing. So the Brahmacharya are too detached. Then sometimes because of this, then what's connected to detachment? What's after attachment? What's the next stage in consciousness? Aversion, yeah. And then what is the philosophy behind, what is the philosophy of aversion? Impersonalism, yeah. Means no problems, right? That's what impersonalism means, no problems. So therefore the Brahmacharya has a tendency, no problems. He doesn't want any problems. Right? Because he's detached. So as long as there's no problems in the Brahmacharya ashram, then it's great. But it's foolish to think that the solution to a situation where there's some problems is then going into an ashram that's only problems. Right? There's a saying in English, out of the frying pan into the fire. Right? It's hot you have a pot, it's very hot inside, right? And it's so hot you think I gotta get out of here. So you jump out of the pot and fall into the fire. Right? So it's no solution. Right? That's not. It means you have to turn the other way. You just have to become Krishna conscious. Therefore, you're not disturbed, right? Haridas Thakur, he's being beaten in 22 markets. Did it bother him? Was he disturbed? No. Okay, so generally we see no Brahmacharya is beating us, you know. No temple president, you know, no one's beating us, let alone in, you know, 22 markets, right? Not even in 22 rooms, right? So therefore it can be tolerated. No problem, right? Not a disturbance. So that's when we become Krishna conscious. Right? So self-control, control of the senses, we discussed that. Then humility, service attitude, cooperation with others, and then here, Krishna consciousness. Right? It has to be Krishna conscious. And Krishna conscious means Krishna conscious. Krishna conscious doesn't mean I got a fancy chugger, I got some special set of neck beads, I got a fatter Brahman thread than everybody, or, you know, I have this or I have that, you know, paraphernalia. That's not what makes me the, you know, advanced Brahmacharya, right? No. It's just according to your nature, you have the things you use in Bhaskarish. Nothing external. Like that. It's just Krishna conscious. We use the external in Krishna's service, but we shouldn't think the external itself is Krishna consciousness. Right? Like that. We use it. Like the saffron. We use that in Krishna's service. Saffron is respected. Therefore, then you can preach. But if it's only for prestige, then what's the use? You know? So it's used in Krishna's service. That's all. So therefore all these things... So Krishna conscious means we want to become Krishna conscious. Therefore all these nice qualities that are there must be there. They must be there. Right? One must always remember the more masculine we are, that has to be balanced with something more feminine. Right? You understand? So Brahmacharya technically is not man or woman. Right? It means they're in the male form, so therefore they have rules and stay away from those in female forms. But their mentality is not that of a man. Man is enjoyer. Right? He enjoys the situation. Right? And feminine also is that of, in the material situation is through service you enjoy, you get what you want, you control through service. You know, and the man controls through, you know, his methods. So therefore, the more manly we are, like many times, it's not as common now, but it was very popular in the 70s and 80s. Brahmacharis were very manly, very tough. Tough brahmacharis, mean brahmacharis, you know. Like, like that. You know, they so tough brahmacharis used to chew on, you know, chunks of wood for breakfast. You know, the women come by, you know, they spit on them. Grihasthas go by, pop that grihasthas. Like that. So that was an idea that this is a solid, you know, this is wow, this is a real sannyasi, real brahmachari. No, this is a man. An unmarried man. It's a bachelor. And he's just enjoying the prestige of not being married. You know, it's just like Yadu said always before the marriage, when they have all the friends of the boy have a party, right, before getting his last days of freedom, you know, like that, or last night of freedom. Like that. I don't know, do you have that? Is that a tradition here or something? Not so much? Huh? Kind of, yeah. In the West they call it a stag party. Bachelor's party, yes. Stag party, same. You know, it's like last day and everybody yucks it up, you know, it's so nice being free, but at the same time as everybody's getting married, you know, it's like they're all saying it's so much better free, but they're all getting married. So whatever, it's a tradition. So it's just a matter of time. So this comes back to the question of why do we see some people are getting, after, you know, a long history of brahmachari life or a long history of sannyas, or even they've been married, you know, so many times, why are they getting married again when they're so much later in life? Basically, it comes down to the point is if they're not getting some taste, as we mentioned in the beginning, taste out of their service in ashram, they have to get it somewhere. And the habit is, it comes from the opposite sex. Men think it's women, women think it's men, by habit. I haven't got it as a brahmachari, as a leader, as a, you know, this, as a that. No, I'll find it in women. You know, it has to be something different. Right? Something different. Opposites attract. So the basic thing is they're not getting a taste, because they're mistaking the externals to be the thing. They're getting the taste of, you know, being unique, distinction, adoration, and profit. Right? So at one point, subtle turns to gross. Right? The mind manifests the scent, body, and senses. Right? So therefore, if distinction, adoration, and profit there, it will manifest as grihasthasya. So that's the thing. So therefore, one has to see that these are gone. Then one can maintain. Even one wants to be a good grihastha, one has to get rid of these. Because ultimately the women, and nothing's going to make one happy. Like that. Another thing is this middle age, one has a tendency to look back on what one's done, right? When you're young, you just is forward, right? You know, yeah, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do so many things. Even then when you get kind of in the middle of the life, it's kind of like life, you start to see the end, you know? And so then you look back, you look at what I have now, and what I did to get it. And if you're satisfied with what you have, then you continue. If you're not satisfied with what you have, then basically what's the natural conclusion? The process I use to get to where I am now, something's wrong. Right? So if I'm married, you know, then it's something wrong in this family, I'll get remarried to another family, or if I've been a brahmachari or sannyasi, that's what's wrong, then I'll get into this. If I've been a temple devotee, I'll live outside. If I'm outside, I'll move inside. If I'm this, like that, right? So this is to advantage for the grihastha. If he has gone through the whole process very nicely, to the best he can. Because then he gets to that age and he looks back, he looks at what I have, right? Okay, I have a little money, I have a little this or that, do I have any happiness? No. Okay, what was the process that I ended up here? I went through, you know, working hard and economic development and all these things and dealing with women and children and family and relatives and this and that and so many social things. It gave no happiness. So what's the alternative? Then, vanaprastha sannyas, right? Because he has dealt, he's seen emotionally it's not proper. So then also the brahmachari, then if he's gone through nicely, then he sees, yes, I've gotten something, and he has been dealing with material energy, he sees that's nothing, there's nothing there. So then he continues on that way, or if he has some attachments, you know, to some things, you know, his, you know, little Ashman cup, or, you know, whatever it is like that, he understands it's not worth it. And then gives up that attachment and moves on. Right? So there's the natural progression. Right? This is called the natural progression. you know, that, yeah. But if one hasn't practiced properly like that, then one hasn't gotten any proper emotional exchange. So therefore, then he has to clamp onto what he thinks is normal, what he is a used to, what is it he's accustomed to, either pious or impious life. You know, spirituality then is not necessarily the important thing. So then it becomes regressive. Like that. That's why these things, the Dharma has to be performed. It's proper. You know, you are married, you have to spend time with the wife and children. You're not married, then you have to spend time and interface with the others in the temple or wherever you're situated. You have to deal with people, right? And then with that proper dealings, then one is happy. And then from that, spiritually one progresses. So one can see. If one looks at it, that's what it is. If you look at it, all these, that's what was the problem. They weren't getting a taste. You know, in these, you know, for most, some of them in a sensual aspect, you know, so that's another thing. So then, that's, but for many, we see it was just emotional, like that. They just didn't get what they were thinking. So then, they adjusted. Does that make sense? Any questions on any of this? But keep to the main points, don't get the side points. You know, don't ask where's the shop where you can get the big neck beads and stuff like that. Side points are how big is too big. Yes.
What we can speak about this devotees who are in Vrindavana, but they said that yes, this Vrindavana is very difficult, right? Because there are devotees. So you better don't go there.
Okay. This is good. This is natural. You'll find that there are Vrindavanas who will give this opinion. There's also women who are good like that. So, but this is kind of how you say. I saw one. These are, how to say, rare moments of honesty. Right? Most grihasthas are embarrassed to say like that. But, you know, you'll find those who are willing to say, at least in closed circles. At least in any case, whatever happens, it shouldn't get back to their wife. Like that. It shouldn't get back to their wife. So that is where you take the inspiration. Is grihasthas that have gone through it properly and they said nothing's here. Right? Like that. So then we see it. And we see it. Urvasi, right? It means She's the material women, right? She's the top. Right? It means there's women higher than her that are above Indra's planet. They're from Indra down. Those who are interested in sense gratification. She's the most beautiful, right? Because she's coming from the Lord. Rumba is number two, because she's coming from this plane, right? But Urvasi is another plane, right? So she's saying, you know, and she's been, how many kings she's been, right? How many personalities, right? She's dancing for every Indra, right? You know, so, you know, in the day of Brahma, she's going to see 14 of them, right? Right? And that's in one day, right? So, you know, they get pretty, you know, they can tell it as it is, you know? So then she's telling Purvarada, you know, what's this about you? So, what's the big deal? Why are you so overwhelmed by all this stuff? You know, there's nothing here. Right? So you see, she's saying, others are saying, you know, either they're directly saying or not directly saying, it was so wonderful, and why is it? Cardano went to the forest. Right? It was so nice, Krishna conscious, right? Krishna counts his wife, God is his son, but he's gone to the forest. You understand? Because the in the material world, these duties still aren't satisfied. They're not direct. They're not direct. And the parental rasa is there when they're young. That's the main. Right? When they're dependent, that's when parental rasa is really fully tasted. When they grow up, it's not. So therefore, his desire to have the Lord as a son has been satisfied. His Kapila now has grown up. And now he's taking care of the mother. Right? So then it moves into a different realm. So the parental rasa is, you know, comes down, becomes satisfied. So that aspect is been satisfied. But materially, there's no satisfaction. Therefore, he's gone to the forest. So it makes some sense. So one should take advantage of grihasthas who are willing to tell it as it is. You know, they're very good friends. Yeah, and that means they actually understand what is brahmacharyasya. Those grihasthas that say, you know, don't support brahmacharyasya or say it's great or, and you know, everybody should get married, that means they don't understand. If they say, for those who need to be married, it's good, that's proper. And then, so some will say, you know, we'll emphasize, if you don't need to get married, don't. And they won't talk so much about it. If you need to, yeah, that they'll agree to it. And then there's those that'll say, you know, those are more detached, you know, more advanced. And then there's those who will say, yes, it's good for those who need require it. And those who don't, yes, they don't get married. They can accommodate not getting married. Like the other ones can accommodate, it's best not to get married, but they can accommodate those who get married. Then you have those who can't accommodate those who don't get married. Right? Misery loves company. So they're saying how it's all this and all this brahmacharya and all this kind of stuff is just it's just a show and all this and that and everybody's going to get married and this and that. So just see, these are persons who they themselves were not good brahmacharis and are not good grihasthas. Otherwise, they wouldn't say that. Otherwise, there's got to be a purpose to a grihasthasya. Is it just to exist in it? No, it has to be. There's a purpose to it. If there's a purpose, that means you have to get that purpose. Right, by some process. And to do that, you have to be qualified in some way. Right? So the qualification for Grihastha Ashram is Brahmacharya. Then you can properly perform the duties in Grihastha Ashram. Then you can get the proper detachment. So if they just say, no, I mean, it's all nonsense, that means that they don't understand that. They don't know the process. They don't know the goal. So they're just washed around by this, you know. So that's whatever reasons. Whatever reasons. That makes sense.
Even in these most fallen age, believer, by understanding what you say, Shastra was supposed to say, many are trying to be renounced, and Prabhupada does say many are successful. But because the most are very strong, most of them are taking another option. So this is understandable. But what is the reason in past yugas, even in great devotees, associates, most of them are taking the option of grihastha life instead of knowing, instead of qualified, instead of being situated in front of goodness, the large associate. Is it in another world or why in past society the option of going through all the ashramas that coming to the last stage is more emphasized or more taken as option? Is there any particular reason for it?
Well, here when you mention about the Lord, you have to distinguish between Leela and that, because there the Lord is means he's the enjoyer, so where is he going to enjoy? Right? It's going to be in the Grihastha Ashram. Because then you can manifest the most variety of relationships.
Conditions.
Yeah. But the associates then but the liberated then that is there because then it provides the most the greatest opportunities for rasa. Right? Because then the Lord can except if he's a grihastha, then he can deal with women, he can deal with children, he can deal with, you know, all these different things, right? Because parental rasa means women are involved, and conjugal rasa means women are involved, right? And then those who are junior, then also, you know, women are, or you have maybe your friends, but he has children. Or you have a servant, they have children. You know, so like this, you have to, the most can be tasted there. So you have to distinguish. What you see is, what they do, everything is perfectly pious. You know, everything we talk about of the perfect pious lifestyle, they're already following it. It's just the natural nature of the soul. It's the natural morality of the soul, the natural, you know, dharma of the soul. Serving Krishna means proper relations with everybody else, because they're all Krishna's devotees. Right? So then that's reflected here. So now if one, just on the point of, is dharma means that it's supposed to be situated in the mode of goodness. Right? So, because someone's in goodness, that doesn't mean, it means a good grihastha can only be one who's actually situated in goodness. Like that. Because he's doing the duties because he's supposed to do them, right? Passion, you're doing because you're going to get a result. Ignorance, you don't know what to do or not do. Right? So, goodness means you do it because it should be done. It must be done. So, you know the right time, right place, right situation, and you do it. So that's goodness. So most of the rules of dharma are in connection with grihastha ashram. So being situated in the mode of goodness doesn't mean that one can't become a grihastha. Just as grihasthas may say that nobody can remain brahmacharya once you get married, the brahmacharis have this idea, anybody who is, you know, a little bit spiritually advanced or a little bit in the mode of goodness wouldn't get married. Right? But as we pointed out before, the difference between the two is realization. Not situated in the mode of goodness or understanding or knowledge or these things. There's the idea that there is some emotional taste to get out of it. Right? And that taste is something they feel will make them happy, satisfying. So then they go for it. It's simply that much. It doesn't mean that they're lusty, this, that. No, those are secondary things. On the platform of dharma, that doesn't come in. Right? Desire for a child is a relationship. Right? You have a child, then you can deal with it so much, you take care, all these things. Right? Then there's a process to get the child. Right? To create the child. But that's part of the bigger picture. Right? That's part of the bigger picture. You understand? No, you understand that point, not the whole thing. Like that is so what it is you have to stay focused. What happens is this clicks off something else and you're already gone, so you become impatient to, you know what I'm saying? But we're getting there. We're just taking, it means I could just say yes or no, but then you might not be satisfied with the answer. Okay, so we're giving you the whole how we're getting there. So, in other words, mode of goodness is not necessarily a point that means that anybody in the mode of goodness shouldn't be a grihastha. No, someone in the mode of goodness, they'll make a better grihastha. I had too much passion, right? Maharaj Dasarath is too attached to Kaikeyi. So, what is the problem is coming from Kaushalya, right? Where, you know, the main dharma and number one, you know, she's the main queen, and then everything's going very nicely. And everything's just day-to-day going and all that. Right? Is there any problems coming there? No. Okay, now he's more attached to Kaikeyi. Are there any problems coming from that? Okay, yes. The whole Ramayana is coming out of that. Right? So, therefore, we can see Ramachandra is attached to his wife. She gets abducted. So, are there any problems arising from that? Right? Does he just... No problems. Okay, Ram's enjoying the Leela. Okay, so also all those devotees are enjoying being grihasthas for the Lord.
No, I speak with Lord.
Yeah, I know you're speaking about lords, but Lord is setting an example for us. He's pointing out that Grihastha Ashram is a can of worms. Prabhupada makes it very clear. He's showing that attachment to a woman is the root cause of all distress. His father was attached to a woman. Therefore, now he's in a forest. He's attached to a woman. Therefore, he laments. And there's a big war and everything like that. Right? So you understand? Like that. Yeah, look, it all goes back. It's attachment, right? Why does Karna say, bring Draupadi out into the assembly? He was a very detached person, you know, just perfectly situated. No, he's attached to women. And of women, Draupadi. But he didn't get Draupadi, Arjuna got. Therefore, because she insulted him, he wants to insult her back. Right? So for a Kshatriya to be insulted in front of other Kshatriyas, it's one thing if she insulted him personally. Okay, that's between her and him. He approaches her personally, right? She's alone, he's alone, and said, you know, all these nice things, oh, you're loitering here and there, and you don't appear that there's any, you know, all these nice things that they go on about it. Right? So he says that, and she says, buzz off, you know? That is okay. He doesn't like her, but there's no need to publicly insult her. A Kshatriya, to his honor, is the most important thing. His honor has been compromised. He is a Kshatriya. But she points out, you're son of a charioteer. I'm not having a son of a charioteer as a husband. So that's in front of every king on the planet. Right? Everybody's there. So now, what is more embarrassing for a woman than to be disrobed in front of everybody? Right? Okay. Not only that, okay, she's disrobed in front of the men. That's really bad. That's terrible. But worse than that is there's all those queens of Duryodhana and others up there who are going to be talking about it. Right? So she'll never get peace. Okay, she may be shy in front of the men, but she doesn't have to live with the men. She goes into the women's place. But they're all going to be talking about it. That means no peace ever. So you can't get anything worse. So it's just, you know, it's just reciprocation. But is it because of attachment to women? So you see, if you look in there, all problems are that. Haranyakashipu, Haranyaksha, come from what? Right? Diti is attached to being prestigious as a woman, so she's attached to women. And her husband is attached to women, therefore he agrees. Therefore problem. You see, it goes back. All problems come from that. Attachment to women. Right? Or attachment to those attached to women. Right? So, you know, men are attached to women, and women are attached to those who are attached to women. You understand? Yeah. So they both get bad association. Right? The man gets the bad association of the women, and the women get the worse association of the man attached to women. Right? So like that. So it comes down to there. So that is being taught. The Lord comes and there's a purpose. He's enjoying it, but there is a lesson also. Right? So therefore, I made the point, was there a problem when Sita was stolen? Yes. Okay. So then so much problem came up. So that is the thing. Is there's going to be problem. The material world is always problem. So just because one's in the mode of goodness or this or that doesn't mean there's going to be problems. So problem is there. Now, the other thing is now most, the common person, how many of them can be, you know, from an early age, just be celibate and that lasts their whole life? And how many generally have a tendency to get married? Yeah. It's a greater portion get married. Right? Okay, so now, if we want to set proper example for people, so what is the most important example to set for them? Yeah. How to engage all their activities of Grihastha Ashram in Krishna's service. What things to do, what not to do. Right? Kasyapa and Aditi. Okay, you want to have a proper child. then therefore you worship the Lord, and by the Lord's blessing in proper consciousness you can see the child. You want to have a number one demon? Okay, then DT shows the way. Right? So these things are there. Everything's there. Practical. How do you do everything? It means how you arrange a marriage. That's shown by Kardama and Devahuti. Right? How you live, you know, that's shown by it. All these they show. And then within that, as a grihastha, then you have an occupational duty, right? Brahmacharis, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis, they don't really have any duties. Within, you know, Brahma and Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra aren't their duties. You understand? A brahmachari is not maintaining himself by the occupational duties of a Brahma. Right? He's using some, it's taking from there, you have to use something. Maybe he's using begging, but that's not the main, right? Teaching others, doing yajna for others, or accepting charity from others. Right? Well, he's just begging. You know? Like that. So he's not taking from there. Vanaprastha is doing rita, right? Collecting whatever is there. No one wants. So that also doesn't fall into the, you know, karmic activities of the Brahma. Sannyasi also, he's preaching, he's teaching. But he's not teaching for remuneration. He's just teaching. Therefore, because there's no remuneration, he can say things as they are. Whether you give him some or not doesn't matter. So therefore, he can say what he wants to say. Well, the priest has to say things nicely. He's the village priest. He can't upset you. You throw him out. He wants to get his donations. He's depending upon pratigraha. Therefore, he's teaching or doing yajnas to get pratigraha. Right? But the sannyasi is not teaching or doing sacrifice for pratigraha. Therefore, they're free. So they don't fall in that category. Okay. So then along with grihastha, then you have to show grihasthas as Brahmins. Right? Grihasthas as Kshatriyas. You know? Generally Vaishya Shudras, if you understand those two, the others will work. Right? Because you have the most complete, you know, you can't get more grihastha facility than Kshatriyas. Right? And you can't get more into the philosophical application and sadhana than the Brahmins. So you put these two, you have it. You understand it. Then of Brahmins, then there's those who are independent, those who are priests, those who are, you know, all these different kinds. All the different occupations, different kinds of kings. So in this way, then you see so much, and then different kings and different Brahmins and different situations. You know, how one's supposed to behave. How one's supposed to do. Yes. So like that. Therefore, then it takes so much. Because Grihastha Ashram is so much. Brahmacharya Ashram is explained very simply. Sannyasa Ashram also very simply. And you take Brahmacharya life and add a few more rules and you have sannyas. Okay? But Grihastha, it's a huge, huge amount of rules. Huge amounts. Actually, all the Dharma Shastra is for Grihasthas. All the Brahmanas are for Grihasthas. So much is there to regulate. So much is there to regulate. So that's why you'll see the example is there. The point is something that you like, it only takes one of them. This is another thing, right? You walk down the street, everybody's wearing so many different things, this and that, but one person's wearing something you like. That's all it takes. It doesn't matter that the whole city's wearing something else. This person's wearing something you like, then you go and find a shop that sells it and buy it, and then you're walking with it. It's not that everybody's wearing, therefore. No, so therefore, if one is inclined towards Brahmacharya life, it only takes one example, and that's enough. And all the other examples of Grihastha and all that, nice, okay, good, but nothing to do with me. Right? Understand? It only takes one. Right? That's the point. A particular preparation. You only have to taste it once, and then you like it. You want it. Right? It's not that there's so many other sweets are there. So that's the whole point. So don't worry about all those others. If brahmachari life is appealing to you, then you just see those examples. The others also are important because they're showing devotional points. The particular detail may or may not be applicable like that. It has its connection, but it may not be so important. But the point is, if you want to preach, then it's good. If you also, in your study, you know those things, you can help others by explaining it to them. That makes sense. Okay. Happy.
Someone asked me this question some time ago. I didn't know quite how to answer it. Regarding those brahmacharis who may or may not need to get married, we heard that those who need to experience what they hear about, those who don't have the realization, they need to get married. What about those that are just very lusty and interested in gross sense gratification and are seeking that limited sense gratification? Because in Vyasa Ashram there's some license for this. They're very lusty and they think they're going to be able to, they're feeling they're not satisfied without this activity. This question is, what are the different categories that we have of brahmacharis? They need to get married. There are those who don't have a realization, and I'm worried, wondering about these that are addicted to sense gratification, and also there may be some other categories. What are these different categories of brahmacharis that need to get married?
As far as I understand, there's Naistika Brahmachari and there's Upakurvana. And within Upakurvana, then there's those who have taken a vow for a particular amount of study. They've studied their whole Veda like that, and then they finish. And within those, then there's also four categories. These are those who are committed themselves to study like that. There are those who they were in 12 years supposed to finish one Veda. So in 12 years they finished the Veda. That's one category. Then another category is they finish the Veda, but it's less than 12 years, and they graduate. Another is 12 years is up, they didn't finish the Veda. And the fourth is they didn't finish 12 years, and they didn't finish the Veda. Right? Then there are those who are brahmachari, I forget for how long, maybe a year. And then there are those who are at least brahmachari for 3 days. So that's the only definitions of brahmachari. The other things that you're talking about technically aren't brahmachari like that, because brahmachari means they're based in pious life. Because grihastha, the word after grihastha is ashram, because it's an ashram, it's a place of, it's a spiritual atmosphere, but it's a spiritual atmosphere in which the material activities of household life can be engaged in the Lord's service. So therefore it's called Grihastha Ashram. And so Krishna is the middle. If the senses are the very important thing, and therefore that's the reason to get married, then this is called Grihamedi. Right? It means the home is the center. Like that. So the difference between the two is simply consciousness. Generally we tend to think, I brought up this point before, is that we tend to think that grihastha means, nice, pious, Krishna conscious, and this, that, or anything that's you're following some rules and regulations. And grihamedi means just completely nasty, sinful, disgusting, wretched, however many, words you can put on the front of it, descriptive terms, and that makes it more, fulfills the definition. And anything less than that, better than that, that's called grihastha. Just like in the similar, shudra just means low class, disgusting, wretched, terrible, idiot, stupid, nonsense, like that. And anything else is different. But the Vedas see it a little differently. Right? Means shudra is a human. Right? And so that's the human platform. But from amongst humans, some can organize economic development, some can organize dharma, and some can organize the spiritual teachings. Then you distinguish those three because they are outstanding amongst human beings because they are able to help the human society. Right? So it works in a different way. Saying grihastha means someone who is able to follow the rules and regulations of grihastha ashram. Maybe they are more advanced or less advanced, like that. They may have some difficulties, but they're fixed and convinced in this. That's grihastha. Where they may be following all the pious things that are mentioned in the shastra, but their purpose is to enjoy household life or heavenly pleasure, they're called grihamedis. They're not called grihasthas. The man, perfect, follows all the duties of pious, grihastha life and that. But he wants to enjoy now, and he's pious, he wants to enjoy and go to the heavenly planets. He's called a grihamedi. He's not called a grihastha. Right? Like that. You see, what are all those things? That verse, like grihasuki. So. Yeah, it means, what are they mentioned? Those are all aspects of pious life. You only get those if you're pious. You don't get those if you're impious. You don't have land if you're impious. You don't have a nice wife or nice children or nice family or a nice home or, good birth, good intelligence, education, unless you're pious. Right? What are they mentioning there? The man is being attached to the child speaking. Right? So that only happens in sinful life? No, it also happens in pious life. So now, depending upon your consciousness, then it's griyamedi and grihasya. Right? It says adverse fruit of activities. Right? Adverse means you're doing it for yourself. Fruit of activities means pious activities. So doing pious activities for sense gratification is also adverse. Right? What's the adverse? The adverse effect is that you get entangled in the material world. Right? You may go to the heavenly planet, so they say, no, it's very nice. No, but it's adverse. That. So this is the general tendency we think is pious, nice, that's good, that's Krishna conscious, that's this. Impious, that means non-Krishna. But pious can also be used in a non-Krishna conscious way. Right? Means all of the basically rules of piety can be misused for sense gratification, artha and kama. Right? Very few of the sinful activities might be able to be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? Rare. But so, therefore, we have to be very careful of this. That's why we simultaneously recommend pious life at the same time criticize it. Right? That's why it's so confusing. Because just to be pious doesn't mean it's perfect. See, if someone's sinful, better to be pious. But actually the thing is to be Krishna conscious. So being sinful and being Krishna conscious is very difficult. Because the sinful means is passion and ignorance. So therefore, the lifestyle of goodness is favorable for Krishna consciousness, which is to develop pure goodness. So, along with cultivating Krishna consciousness, the activities of pious life are also there. Like we rise early in the morning, we take our bath, these are pious things. We regulate our eating, we regulate our sleeping. These are activities of piety. They're not themselves devotional service. Right? Like that. But they are favorable for devotional service. If you just eat prasad anytime you like, you have a tendency to see prasad in the material way. But if you regulate it, then you honor prasad. Right? So it's favorable for devotional service. You understand? Like that. So therefore, it's good. But just because you're doing it, someone becomes proud that they're the best at getting up in the morning, they're the first up in the morning, they're the most clean, their locker's the most tidy, they're the most expert in all the sadhana, it's like that. Then they become proud that they're better than everybody else in this and this. What's the use? Then they say, what is the use of it? You know? Like that. The yogic Brahmins were very fixed in their vows of yajna. Yeah, when you have an offering to be offered into the sacrifice, it's not given to anybody else before. It's against the rules. They committed themselves to those rules, they followed them. But what they missed the point was, is generally those are offered into the fire, you know, at the end. When then from there the Purnahuti, then maybe, you know, Agni will take it, or if you're very lucky, Vishnu himself might come and take it. Right? Here, Vishnu came before the yajna and asked for this stuff. Don't even bother with the yajna, I'll just take it straight. And they're so foolish. No, I have to go through all these pious things. So therefore, then we'll say useless. Useful means it gets you Krishna. Useless means it doesn't get you Krishna. So if it's getting you Krishna, helping you get Krishna, it's useful. It's not, it's useless. So the item itself is not useful or useless, it's whether it's connected to Krishna. This microphone, it's being used for Krishna, it's useful. Right? You take this down to the local discotheque, it's useless. You'll say, it's the same mic, we hired it from the same company. No, the one's useful. So it's not the item, it's how it's being used. Certain items, yes, cannot be used in a Krishna service. So therefore, those are always useless. And certain items are very highly, you know, recommended to use. They work very nicely, like that. And then there's some things that are neutral. So therefore we do. So whatever is very important, that's already been taken and put into the Pancharatrik process, or into the Bhagavad process. It's already there. And then those things that are generally okay, they're neutral, like that. Those have been taken and they're left in the Varnashram system for us. Our Vedic system. And then those things that are rejected, that are unfavorable, or against devotional principles, those then we talk about. They're in the Varnashram and we've rejected them. Like that. So then it becomes neutral, it's okay. So we have to be very careful that we don't miss the point. And then we misjudge something. So therefore, Grihastha life can be very pious, and it's actually sinful because it's not for Krishna. Right? So, Griha Medhi is a matter of consciousness. And the reason that those chapters are in the Bhagavatam is because devotees also can become Griha Medhis. Right? If it's their house first and Krishna second, then they're, you know, Krishna conscious Griha Medhis. Because the house is first. And if Krishna is first, and the house then goes around Krishna, then they're grihasthas. But you have to know the art. Some will say, well, we have to be practical. No one said, no, be practical. Our ashram is so practical. There's more rules in there, how many can digest all the rules that are there in mind? And those are practical for getting you good results. You know, each one of them yields some result, some material fruit. So what's more practical than that? But you have to see the living entity and apply the situation. Right? So therefore, it's a matter of how. Okay, you have to take care of the wife and kids, but how to do it so that they advance and you advance. It can be done. There's not just one way to do anything. There's so many ways. But depending upon the situation, it changes. Otherwise, if it's only supposed to be one way, then yes, you sit at your office, make your plans, and then you go home and execute those plans exactly. Don't change. Right? If you change, then you're not being true. But when you get home, you find the situation, the house is different, the wife is like this, the son like that, you have to change your plans. You know? So now what do you do? So that's why the Varnashram has so many rules and regulations. So that all situations, all different things, you have something that you can fall back on. Something you can engage Krishna's, in Krishna's service. Right? You have to walk somewhere to go to work. Okay, so then, therefore, you should be, when you're walking, be careful you're not stepping on anything. So that's the rule of mama. So then, my walking to work also now is engaged according to proper Krishna conscious direction. So, like that. So it is. In other words, it can't be understood. Grihastha life can't be understood without philosophy. It means if you have religion without philosophy, you get sentiment. You know, so that's the. And if you have philosophy without religion, you get mental speculation. So the two have to be combined. Then it works. Without philosophy, it's just like, okay, I have to get there. It says don't step on the ants, but you know, right in front of the door to the office, there's a million ants there. I can't get in without stepping on them. You know, this is important, I go inside. But if you understand philosophy, I step on those ants, yes, but then what's going to happen in the future? I'm going to be stepped on, right? And I stepped on, you know, 100 ants, I'm going to be stepped on 100 times. You know, very simple. So therefore, I will either, you know, find some other way or go in another door, you know, or get a room, sweep room, something. So what's practical? Okay, I get in the office today and then I've stepped on 100 times in the future. Is that practical? So it just depends upon what you call practical. So you have to have some philosophy to make for religion to make sense. That's why, you know, we see young people give up. Because it doesn't make sense. The adults follow it out of sentiment and can't explain it. So there's no philosophy. So you have to have both. Or we have our so much philosophy and then we don't follow any proper behavior. You know, and the brahmachari, therefore, you know, we can walk down the hall and knock out all the women out of the way. You know, so that's philosophy without religion. We either walk down the hall nicely or we come, there's a little door over here. It says, no ladies. You just walk through that. You can get to anywhere you want. That way is too much trouble. You don't march through like a bull in a Chinese shop. You go this way. So that's the point. The two have to be combined. Religion and philosophy. Then you get results. Is that okay? Yes.
What was spoken in the morning, I just had a. In this second verse of fourth chapter, Imam Raja Shreya Vidhu, in that Prabhupada writes that the kings were supposed to know this, that they could impart this knowledge through education, culture, and devotion. So I just wanted to know. Morning class of the wisdom of culture. How do we define and what exactly is culture?
So culture basically, the simplest definition is Sanskriti. Means that it's proper behavior. So then proper behavior in connection with everything, that's culture. You know, so how you dress, how you speak, how you walk, how you sit, how you associate with others. You know, then in that, you know, people like to sing, so there's a culture of singing. Comes from Gandharva Veda or dancing or drama. You know, there's a culture on how you have a house, how you build your house. You know, there's a culture on medicine. What is the proper way to use the herbs, what they're for. The proper way, even if you do have a fight, what's the way to fight as a culture. you know, so, you know, you're speaking, your ritual, you know, your, all these different things. So everything in life, then it all has connections. So all the Vedic literatures are teaching us how to properly behave. What is the proper activity? What is the proper behavior? So that would then be the culture like that. Then within the, so then the culture has two sides of it. One is the Shastra, means the scriptural side that is dealing with, well, yeah, whatever. Basically it means you'll have your philosophical side. It means, let's say actually you have three aspects. You'll have the philosophy of an activity, the technique of the activity, and then the applied activity. Does that make some sense? Just like, okay, you take Ayurveda, and then, so it'll say for a particular disease, then there is particular food that should be eaten in a particular season, right? Okay, so that's, you know, that's aspect of it. Then you have, then you have the techniques of preparation. You know, so for this disease, then, you know, things should be, you know, boiled, or it should be deep fried, or it should be, you know, soaked in water, or like this or that. So that's the technique. Then the last is the art, how you actually do it. Right? How do you actually soak it in water? You know, I mean, there's a way, if you don't know properly, then you have something. Then, you know, I'll just put it on the ground and throw water on it. No, I have to put it in the pot. And if I'm not a good aim, I won't get it in the pot. So if I'm pouring it from one thing into another, there's a way to do that. So the Shastras don't tell you that. You know, they don't say put your hands there, or, you know, it's not going to pour, so use a spoon, or, you know, there's so many ways you can get something from one thing into another. Then how do you get water in there? Right? It's a big container with this taps over there, the pots here, how do I get it? So it's an art, how do you get the water in there? I can take a bucket, I can get a hose, I can, you know, call 20 brahmacharis, we can drag the pot over there, you know, or, you know, so many things can be done. So that's the art. And then for someone who really knows, then there's the connection between this similarity between this subject and another subject. And then more is then the origin of that subject and the transcendence. How that comes in like this. You know, why is it this in this season? Right? Why is it warm things are taken in the cold season? Right? If we look back, that's how Krishna likes it. That's the fun of the cold season. You can drink warm drinks. And the fun of the hot season, you can drink cool drinks. Right? And then there'll be some way that transforms through to create the whole metaphysical thing on this side. Yeah. So, like this, you see. So generally nowadays, the art of application is what we call culture. Right? You see the singing, the dancing, and this, that's called culture. But that singing and dancing is depending upon the techniques mentioned in the Shastra. And certain things should be done in a certain way to give a particular mood. So those things are there. So generally we don't think of that. So the culture means its application. That's the how we see it, how it contacts the senses and the mind. But behind that should be also the scripture. That study and practice and application of the scripture. Yeah. Does that make sense? Because knowledge must be studied, it must be practiced. And then there's an application to that. Therefore, every branch of knowledge also has its arts. Like that. Does that make sense? So culture then means practically applying all the various aspects of the scriptures, but for us means in relationship to Krishna. So we sing for Krishna, we dance for Krishna, we do drama for Krishna. We do architectures for Krishna. You know, language is for Krishna. You know, we're doing, you know, mathematics is for Krishna. Right? We're discussing rules of Dharma is for Krishna. Right? Logic is for Krishna. So, therefore, then, everything, you know, history is for Krishna. or it's about Krishna. So then all the different branches then are there. So the branches themselves are the science, the application is the art. The combined thing is the culture. But depending upon your audience, then it may mean broader. Or for most in the contemporary, modern art, our culture simply means what we call generally the fine arts. You know, lalit kala, like that. But otherwise, it does mean bigger than that. Like, because you say someone is, you know, a cultured gentleman. Why? He got out on the street and sang the latest, you know, hit song, or, you know, no. Just he walked properly, dresses properly, he speaks properly. So behavior is the main thing, and then from this, all these other things expand. Does that make sense? How are we continue with it? Yeah. Is going for the subtle. Means externally we'll be doing, so that's being done. But we have to get to the actual item itself, which is a move. The mind is attached to somewhere. So just because we don't do it doesn't mean we're not attached. So the whole idea is we have to get the mind to not be attached. So we have to see what is the mind, what is the purposes behind it, what is the mind expecting to get out of it. You know? So then if we have that, and if we understand that, then with the intelligence and with practice, then we can overcome these things. But one has to be in good association, and one has to desire that. Desire is very important. One has to desire to be proper, because everything's coming from desire. We have material desire, then we move in that direction. We have spiritual, we move in that direction. So desire is the most important. So when we want to give up material desire, then everything will become perfect. Devotional service, everything. But especially it makes it then very quick in the brahmachari life. You know, because brahmacharis then, they have very few things that they're entangled with. Right? You know, they have a dhoti they have to take care of, you know, a pair of shoes, a locker. A few things, and that's it. And so they don't. And you know, if they lose it or they find that there's something there, okay, they bought themselves too fancy of a dhoti. And they realize afterwards that, you know, that was their motive, this fancy dhoti. They liked the fancy dhoti and they wanted to be special. You know? So then it's very easy to give it away. Entanglement's over in a moment. Right? But now you get married and then you figure out you're entangled. You can't just, you know, give your wife and kids away. You're stuck for some time. So therefore, even though the detachment is the essential point for everybody, still to be able to work in the realm of detachment, then it's very natural and easy for the brahmacharis. Well, the grihasthas, then they have to be detached in the realm of attachment. But so brahmacharis are supposed to be detached in the realm of detachment. They should be detached, attached to their detachment. Right? Means the reason you're a brahmachari, means in the beginning, that's the way it will be, but ultimately it can be. In the beginning, we're a brahmachari because grihastha life is too much trouble. If grihastha life wasn't trouble, I'd be a grihastha. But since it is trouble, I'm not doing it. But ultimately, that's still looking at the material nature and just going, this is bad. But at some point we have to turn around and look at Krishna and go, this is good. Right? So that, therefore, these practices are there to keep us from getting attached. Because if we're attached to Maya, how will we be attached to Krishna? So that attachment to, so therefore we can't be attached to detachment, in that we won't turn around and look at Krishna. Right? Like that. So then, so that becomes. So from brahmachari, then we become a devotee. Or from grihastha, we become a devotee. Like that. That's the idea. Devotee meaning actual devotee, pure devotee. So it's a platform that we find what is our conditioned nature. Our conditioned nature is that we've had enough of all this, so therefore I'm in a position where I don't have to deal with this. And so then we deal, right? Means you want to engage everything in Krishna's service, then, you know, women and homes and this are also part of Krishna's service. So therefore it restricts what you can engage. Right? But at the same time is you know, it's fine. Because we have that attachment and detachment. So within our realm of detachment, we engage that in Krishna's service. Grihasthas into their realm of attachment. So that means the areas of detachment, they can't engage. They can't just be free, come to the temple, spend their time. No. They have to engage their attachments in Krishna's service. Right? But we see, like the Acharya, he's not attached or detached. Therefore, he just engages in Krishna's service. And for him, there's no need of all these other things. Therefore, he doesn't get involved. There's no need to get for him to deal with women. But there's no problem in him instructing and guiding, you know, giving direction to grihasthas. Right? Brahmacharya may not want to talk about it. Right? Because of his detachment. He's attached to his detachment, so he can't talk about it. But, you know, some more advanced, he can talk about it. Because it's nothing they need. They don't need it. Like a doctor, they're not attached to all the medicines that they're giving to people. So because of that, they can give this diet to this person, that diet. If they were attached, then yes, they'd always give the same diet. Same diet, same lifestyle, same everything. Same medicine. It worked for me, great, you know, you should take it. No, but you had a cold, I had a fever. No, but it was really nice medicine, you know, tasted great. No, so it's... Does it make sense? So the point is that ultimately we're doing these things just because it pleases Krishna. Not because it pleases itself. In the beginning we're doing it pleases us. I don't want to get married. But in the future, it comes that I want to just spend all my time in service for Krishna. So brahmacharya ashram is more favorable. So therefore, I'm engaging the brahmacharya ashram in Krishna's service. You understand? So it just naturally just progresses. So one can either take it from that ashram all the way through to Krishna, or go through stages of ashrams and get to Krishna. Main point is, as long as Krishna is the center and you're progressing towards Krishna, it doesn't really matter which system you choose. You know, nivritti or pravritti. It doesn't matter. Something wrong? Okay. Don't be afraid.
Recently, Prabhupada said to Ravindra Swami again, and he gave the example. Ravindra Swami. So he gave the example that two scholars sitting in one pub and they are talking about Jivendra Swami's Tattva Sandarbha and doing all nonsense.
Yeah.
So we can't say that they have knowledge, they have some piece of information. So they can't change the transfer the heart of the people. So I'm asking about within the ashram or within spiritual society, the person may have some ability to speak, present some things or things, impress people, but if he doesn't have full sense control or proper behavior, so in that situation, isn't there we can, because they have the ability to do certain things, logics or speaking ability, they can't stop also. At the same time, if we speak, he's not behaving properly, so he's not going to affect the people's life. And he may be misunderstood also. So in that situation, what person should be, what is the guidance for such persons? We can't, should stop the activity of bodily ability, or should improve the behavior, how should the approach this particular issue?
Means every item. So here is the question: is speaking. So speaking, then you'll see, is in all situations of life, right? All of the varnas have speaking. So it's just a matter of which speaking you should do. Point is your speaking should be engaged in Krishna's service. So let's say your behavior is not so good. Okay, so then when you speak all kinds of philosophy, then nobody appreciates it. And so you're not benefited, they're not benefited. But now if you act in a drama, right, and you do your part nicely, and then in that drama, then the same points are being made, and people are affected. Right? So therefore then one can see is, okay, speaking you must do, but how do you use that speaking for Krishna? That it fits your nature. You know? If it's, you may have a nature to do something, but your character is not good enough, then you have to purify the character. Right? By devotional practices, that should purify the character. Like that. It's the highest platform of, you know, purity. So it will purify the character. So then, while that character is not good, then even though it's your nature, you can't operate it. So therefore, one may perform activities that are going to be favorable for that purification and uplift yourself. At the same time, if someone has a nature, by engaging that nature in Krishna's service, they make advancement. So therefore, then you need to just find a situation in which at least something can be done. You know? Okay, instead of addressing huge crowds of people, maybe you talk to one or two people. And by this way, you engage your speaking capacity. You're performing devotional activities that are purifying you, and this gradually you're being uplifted. You know? So you have to see it's just your nature is engaged, and your nature is engaged, and then you're purifying yourself. So it's not, that's oneself, one should try to understand that that's why it's important that those who are helping others situate themselves should understand the sphere of nature. You know, what is the categories of nature, and how to identify them, so how to engage them. You know? And then it becomes beneficial.
Maharaj, what is the position of the so-called Kali Yuga Brahmachari? Traditionally, brahmacharis are in the ashram from 5 years old to 25 years old. They celebrate this whole time, no simple activities, studying. But we see today in Kali Yuga and today's class society that devotees that are taking the brahmachari life, but they haven't been in the ashram since 5 years old, and they have performed some illicit activity during some point in their lives. And then they want to pursue brahmachari life. Can they be considered brahmacharis? What category can they come in? Even when we saw Krishna stole the clothes from the gopis and they came out and they wanted to be married to him, and they said it, and he, by seeing them naked, only their husbands can see them, so they became his wives. So brahmacharis never married. What if some brahmachari through illicit activity or some other way seen naked women? And so he's, do you understand the question? What is the position? Can someone be considered a brahmachari? Or if he's lived with one woman for some time, he wasn't married, and then he takes to this renounced order, is he a brahmachari? Is he a vanprastha? Can he be considered any of these categories? How is Kali Yuga brahmachari fit into the Maharashtra?
I mean, brahmacharya means the ashram where one is studying and one is taking the position of menial servant. That. So that is brahmacharya. So now the ideal is that will have begun at the beginning of life. As the whole idea is a new life means you have the same soul with the same material desires. but they forget how they tried to fulfill those desires in previous life. So the desire may be there, but it's unfocused. Right? It's unfocused. So then taking, when one is, you know, takes birth again, those desires are still there in the heart, but one doesn't have a focus on what it is. Right? So then if one takes up brahmacharya ashram at that time, then the study is very focused. Then it works nicely, ideally. Now if one has engaged in so many different activities or had so many experiences, then it's less than ideal, because then you've missed out the benefit of having forgotten about all those things by taking birth again. But the principle is the same. Is one is a brahmacharya, if one is studying and all those kind of things like that. He's studying and acting as a menial servant. Vanaprastha means he studies, but generally he already has some knowledge. Right? And generally he can work with his household facilities, or he can renounce them. But he's independent. Right? Brahmacharya generally means they're not independent, they're working under some authority. So it just depends upon the person, the situation. Like that, whether they're brahmacharya or whether they be vanaprastha. Vanaprastha generally means they perform the grihastha activities, and they've gone through it. Their kids are growing up, this, that, and then they come in contact. So they may live in the temple like a brahmacharya, but they're actually different. And they should be dealt with differently than the brahmacharyas. Because they're not. They're not 20 years old. You know, they're 50 years old. So therefore, they should be respected for being 50 years old and all those things. Though they may be very new and junior and all that, and not know anything, and a younger brahmacharya is training them or giving them service, but still, they can't be treated just like any other person. They have to be treated. Vanaprastha is in a senior position. But the spiritual platform is senior to that. So anybody with spiritual knowledge then is teacher. Right? The knowledge in the realm of Brahmas is the most respectable point. But age and other things are also to be respected. So those both have to be taken care of. You know, but it just means it's a disadvantage, but whatever. Main point is that they've given up association with women. Right? Brahmacharya means he was with his mother, he gives up that association, and now he's with the teacher. In the future, then he might get married. So then he's with women again. So if he was with women before, you know, he was with his mother and then he moved on to other women, okay, that's there, but he gives that up. Then he becomes a brahmacharya. And then he may remain like that, or he may get involved with women again later after his training. So that's the principle. It appears that everybody has things to do now. Yeah, so, yeah, okay. The mind gets distracted. So, how you say, understanding that this is a brahmachari class, and understanding the priorities of brahmacharis, therefore it's very important, according to brahmachari dharma, that we stop now. Right? Because the brahmacharyas must get their taste from somewhere. Right? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivrinda ki,